brought in a work session on the higher ed budget. And so, Steve, would you get us started?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you know, you have basically done all of the actual decisions that you can make on the budget so far, pending its return to you later this session for consideration of funding enhancements and cuts. What I've arranged for today's meeting, however, is I'd like to take some time to discuss with you the impacts of the cuts that are in the governor's budget in terms of numbers. You've heard some programmatic discussion, but the impacts in terms of numbers, point out to you a little more information about the enhancements that people are considering, and here, see if I can get from you any direction of information that you would like to have before you return for a work session, for your final work sessions on this budget. If I may, I'd like to start by explaining how the cuts impact the system's finances on a campus basis, or how this is actually affecting the campus budgets. And in order to do that, I've distributed a very large spreadsheet. For the people in the audience, it's not quite this large. We ran out of the big, really big paper. But and this spreadsheet, which looks very maybe a bit intimidating, really isn't that bad once you start to look at it. And I'd like to just explain what this is showing and show what the, you know, what kind of information this is giving you here. What this first spreadsheet does is it takes all of the cuts that are in the governor's budget and estimates, and I really emphasize this is an estimate, how that impacts the budget of each of the seven campuses. Those are in columns C through I, of the statewide public service programs of OS of Oregon State in column 11, and then of the centralized services, the Chancellor's Office and the other system-wide programs in columns M through P. So these are all of the cuts and how they are distributed. If you go down a column, for example, column C, it shows you the impact of the budget on Easterns, or the impact of the proposed budget on Eastern. So I'd like to first point out that if you look at the box, it starts in rows 8 through 14. These are the dollars that are distributed through the cell values. The stuff that are below, that is below that, are particular program areas that are being affected, or targeted programs that are being affected by the governor's proposed budget. I would ask that you look online, row 13. And what row 13 does is it shows the impacts to the campuses of reductions in the fell values as a result of reductions in the budget in funding for payroll, in funding for inflationary costs, some statewide public service adjustments, and additional cut that's in there that is taken against the fell values.
And Steve, excuse me. The cell values, 9 through 12, are those the only items that are considered in the cell value when we're talking about cell values?
These are items, the cell values actually represent the funding that's provided on a per student basis.
Okay.
But these are how, this translates how these cuts in the governor's budget would be implemented by higher ed. For those set of cuts that are not specified or associated with a particular targeted program, the only way to implement those cuts is to reduce the cell values, because institutions get their money either through the cell values, where they get most of their money, or through a particular targeted program. So
what would be, like in item 9, unidentified reductions related to 4 plus 4 tuition increase?
That refers to a $25.2 million cut that's in the governor's budget that is not identified as to what the purpose of that is. It's just a cut. And it's equal in amount to the tuition increase that was allowed.
Question?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Am I right in assuming then, Steve, the major reason for the differences in this is almost totally attributable to the number of students in each institution?
Exactly. That's exactly the case. This is based on the number of students and the mix of students. To the extent that a campus has a high or has a high percentage of students that are highly funded because they're in expensive programs. For example, Oregon State has a lot of agriculture engineering programs. These are the high-cost programs.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's a reduction in that cell value, you can see there are high numbers there for OSU. So it's based on both the number of students and the student mix. And again, these are all estimates. Because what will eventually happen is, these are all based on projections of what the enrollments will be and the student mix will be. And the projections can't possibly be right on track. So there will be a settle-up process which will adjust for how the actual enrollment
goes. This is the December original governor's recommended.
Correct.
It's not the revised recommended with the 45 million.
Correct.
Because the 45 million would mostly go into this area.
Yes, it would. The governor asked higher ed to indicate what their highest priority would be for that $45 million, and it would be to fully restore those cuts that are listed.
Would 45 do that? Would it fully restore them?
As you see, right, if you look in J 13. There's a number there, 34 million.
Yes.
That's the reduction from the current service level
mm-hmm.
in the cell value funding,
mm-hmm.
plus another 2.8 million for vet med and pharmacy.
So the 45 would cover all of that.
It would more than cover it.
However,
this again is excluding, this is from the current service level.
Yeah.
If you look at the second page, or for those of you out there, flip it over.
Can I have a question on that?
Representative Schrader.
On that, is that just enrollment, Steve, or are you taking into account the RAM model when you're looking at those individual campuses and redistribution based on targeted programs and that sort of thing?
It will lower down.
Lower down.
Right now, we're just looking
just
at that.
Okay, thanks.
See, a follow up on that. The $45 million that we're going to be considering on the restoration, does that get us back to fully funding the model?
What that would do is, if you flip to the second page here, this table is exactly the same as the first one you saw with just one change. And the one change is, this includes the $12.7 million. It keeps coming up again and again.
Okay.
This is the salary increase above the statewide average rate. All of that is shown in row 11, so that number's up by 12.7 million. And now, if you look on the second page, when you add that 12.7 million in, for total campuses in J13, the loss is about $45 million. And that's what the governor based his $45 million restoration on. To restore that $45 million cut.
Yeah. Okay. So that includes the $12 million.
Yeah. Right.
Does it say that in here any place?
It just says here, impact including limited salary funds.
Okay.
As opposed to CSL.
Okay, got it.
One thing to note as well, and I don't want to go into this too much, but there will be additional funding for higher ed beyond what you approve in this bill, because you will be approving before the session adjourns of statewide salary funding to fund salary increases for the upcoming biennium. And higher ed will receive a significant portion of that. They often receive up to 25% of those funds or more. What that would mean is that higher ed will be getting another $25 million, probably. We don't know exactly. It depends upon your decision. But they could be getting an extra $25 million, which will flow through these cell values and are not even shown on this page. So that would tend to increase the cell values. That's how they would distribute that.
I understand that. Mm-hmm.
but that's not being shown here.
So why can't we show that here?
Part of the reason we cannot show that here, or we do not show that here, is we don't know exactly how much those funds will be for higher ed.
But there will be a pool of funds to increase state employees' salaries.
Yes, we're assuming you do approve that.
Now, is that just classified salaries, or is that faculty salaries as well?
All salaries.
All salaries.
I think the chancellor wanted to comment. Sorry.
Well, certainly, please come up to the table, Joe. We probably have other questions for you.
The question was in reference to those funds. That is salary and that's to cover salaries and benefits.
Correct.
Any changes, not just salaries.
Correct.
Okay, I just want to be certain, Senator.
So the $25 million, Mr. Chair, $25 million is salary plus.
We would use that to cover both salary increases and benefits.
Question is, I want
healthcare. Okay, I just want to be certain.
Representative Schrader, stay there, Joe.
So, well, that's actually for LFO, I think, although Joe can comment. So none of the salary increases that they're going to get, if that $100 million or something close to that goes through, is reflected in this model, the revenues that you've shown here.
That's correct. Those are not shown here. This is the funding
so,
5524, the bill
so,
for you today.
The $45 million would be well in excess of their CSL budget if you add those salaries in, or at least some of that $25 million or whatever.
It's a little tricky because what the portion of the $100 million or whatever it ends up to be is for is to fund future salary increases that would be awarded after July 1st of this year. And the CSL, by definition, doesn't include that. So the confusion is that when they're talking about targeting a certain cell value level, like let's keep the cell values at 87.9%, when those additional funds come in, higher ed will apply most of those through the cell values. They'll set aside some of them for the statewide, mm-hmm. which aren't funded through the cells, some of them for the chancellor's office, which aren't funded through the cells. But for the campuses, the way they distribute that is through adjusting the cell values. And I think the cost of this is very difficult to use a cell value target and say, you know, we want it to be at this level or that level. It's just better to look at the impacts of the, you know, on the bottom line of the campus.
Yeah, members, you know, don't hesitate to ask questions because this is fairly complex. Mm-hmm. Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve, can you tell us this $25 million, what the vehicle will be for that? Will there be an actual bill or do you have the number?
I don't have that offhand. It's the bill, and I'll get that for you. It's the bill that makes the appropriation to the emergency board.
Okay.
And it's usually the last bill of the session.
Thank you.
And that will come to this Ways and Means Committee, or does it have to go through the floor of the House or Senate?
Goes through a committee.
Goes through a committee.
Which one?
Yeah. We will be looking out for it. Okay?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Trove.
This is not just unique to higher ed. The salaries will go to any agency that has a substantial number of employees.
From what I hear you say, higher ed traditionally or can get about 25% of the pool.
They've gotten between 25% and I think 30%.
So that's where you get the $25 million on the $100 million for all public employees.
So mostly
it'll be
20.
If I may ask you to look back at the front page again. If you start looking at starting with row 17, this shows the impact of the cuts in the governor's budget that he identified for specific targeted programs on campuses and on the centralized operations of OUS. So you can see, looking at row 17, the campus public service cut, you can see the estimated impacts on the budgets of each of the campuses. Some of them aren't receiving funds under that particular line item of the model now, so the cut doesn't affect them directly. Others are receiving funds, so cutting those funds has the impacts that are shown here. And you can go down. There are others. There's the centralized service cuts. There's a ending of funding for Smart Jitney. There are cuts in collaborative programs, specialty disciplines, the RAM reserve. There on line 26 is the research cut, which you heard a great deal about, the $10 million cut in research. This is the estimate of how the dollars fall out for each of the seven campuses. There's campus performance awards are not in the governor's budget at $2 million. The distribution here that I put in, or this is row 27, is really up in the air. It's just based on how they were distributed last time. But there's no, you know, they could be distributed substantially different next time. But if you go to row 30, this shows the impacts of the general fund reductions from current service level on each of the campuses. And you can see how the numbers vary. Again, I'd like to stress again, these are estimated. The purpose of this, really, when you look at this, should be to give you a better idea of how the kind of decisions that you're making on targeted program cuts or cell values, how they work through the system to be distributed to campuses, but don't feel that these numbers are in stone. They will vary. In some cases, they're estimates to begin with. In other cases, they're pretty solid, but they could change if the enrollment numbers change.
Now, as far as we know, there's been no money allocated to make up for these reductions, except maybe in the statewide public services. There was mention of some reduction in those cuts.
That's correct. If you look on row 30, which is shaded in, if you go to column L, row 30, you can see the cuts for the statewide public services are $15.1 million. And you can see some of the other things, the cuts for the chancellor's office, the actual operations of the chancellor's office is about $5.7 million. For the campuses altogether, it's about $57.8 million in cuts from current service level. If you go back, just flip real quickly to the second page, you can see that the $57.8 million cut, when you add in the fact salaries aren't fully funded, means that the campuses have to look towards $68.2 million in reduction in order to pay for the salaries that are anticipated. But again, we're looking here at current service level. And I apologize for the two different ways of looking at it, but I know this is something that, is of interest to the committee.
Yes, Representative Schrader.
Cutting to the chase, kind of at the bottom of the page or on line 52, I guess I'd be interested in maybe a quickie discussion from Chancellor Cox on how they adjusted those. I'm sure the same type of, they did the same type of process last time, obviously, to distribute the money. They probably figured out that on a pure enrollment basis, OSU lost money, Eastern lost money, OIT came out good, whatever. And then they adjusted those based on either adjustments or the targeted programs. How does that work, Joe, in practice? Or did you do a different process?
Let me ask Mr. Andis to come up.
Is that a
Representative Schrader, what I would say, I we haven't had a chance to run Steve's numbers. Steve's
right.
Actual numbers.
Numbers
I think
aside.
They're probably, my eyeballing tells me, unless Tom is disagreeing, that they're pretty close. What Steve has done is a proportional, based on a snapshot of current enrollment and its current distribution, he's done a snapshot of what that might look like. Just by way of caveat, we could see a significant change in the mix in a particular institution between Tier 1 cost programs and Tier 3, which would cause us to change this. My guess is it wouldn't change that much. He has tried to factor in enrollment, actual enrollment, by actual level of cost. That's about the way we would do it. Unless I've misspoken, Tom, you can correct the chancellor. If you want.
Yeah. I think it was excellent. And you do have the targeted programs. I mean, you've got a combination of what runs through the cells that's enrollment-related, and then you've got the targeted programs where the governor was very specific in saying, we're going to take $10 million out of research. What we had to do in those instances was then identify what the allocations in terms of research was to each campus and basically just prorate that out for the $10 million. It would be the same thing with all the targeted programs.
Okay. All right. Good.
Lines 33 through 36, look at some of the enhancements that are included in the governor's budget. The governor includes on line 35 $17 million for enrollment-related or enrollment growth. This is the distribution that OUS showed me for these funds if they are to be based on what the expectations of enrollment change are for the upcoming biennium. Mm-hmm. This, though, I think is a policy issue that this committee will need to address, and that is whether the $17 million should be distributed based on some type of increase in an institution's enrollment over what they are enrolling now, or whether it should be used to be distributed to all students, for all students, by increasing the cell values. I think those are really the two alternatives. If you do it the second way, you still distribute the full $17 million, but the distribution will be different among campuses.
If I may, Chairman Hartung, Steve makes a very good point. In conversations with the governor and staff, the governor backed away from being very specific about the $17 million, and we finally agreed that it should be there to deal with enrollment issues. On some campuses, that could be growth, and probably that'll be most of it. But on other campuses, there could be a change in the mix because enrollment has shifted, and we would want some ability to address that. So at the end of the conversation, the governor and staff backed away from putting anything on that other than any specific limitations other than enrollment issues, allowing us the flexibility to decide the best uses of those funds over the biennium.
Line 35, enrollment-related costs. And as you say, growth would be one of the main...
That would be the most significant.
Yeah. But, you know, it seems to me like you have an extra 1,000 students at one of the universities, and basically that adds 3 or 4 students per class. Doesn't involve hiring a new teacher or proportionally fewer teachers. So do we have any enrollment growth efficiencies that we consider or take advantage of, or is every time we get a student there, it costs us more?
The formula isn't that finite that it's an individual single student changes very much. It's in the aggregate. And the campuses are free to use the enrollment dollars that they've been given and distribute them on campus, taking into account local changes and local issues and local needs, which we would never try to prescribe. It just wouldn't make sense for us to try to prescribe that from the system level.
So would the deans, for instance,
yes, sir.
Oh, you're going to have 22 instead of, you know, 16 or 18, so we need a separate class. Is that the kind of discussion you go through?
It's been a long time since I sat with deans, but it does get down to that level of here's what we face, and there's a lot of give and take in the dean's council.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how it ought to be. I don't think we ought to try to manage that from this end. I would say that I do think that growth would be the greatest part of this use. The other issues would have to do with student shifts in enrollment and levels.
Yeah.
It's never on the basis of you've changed by 5 students, therefore there's some kind of immediate incremental. It's in the aggregate.
See, the point I'm getting at, you know, we're all reveling in the idea how great it is with all the growth that we've had. And, you know, unless there's some efficiencies in, you know, keeping up the quality and growth, I mean, we're going to run out of money, you know, taking care of the enrollment growth as it relates to the costs.
Tom, may want to answer? Yeah. And President Risser is sitting next to me, probably
sure.
Is closer to this than either Tom or I.
Okay.
Senator Hartung, one of the things that I think, and you may get tired of hearing this, but if you're one of the problems that we're confronted with is that we're not funding at that 100% level. And if we're even funding lower than the 88% level, when you add that student, you know, if this was funded at 100%, I would kind of agree to some degree that a marginal addition of some students can be handled without having the full cost of the student. But we're right now talking about if you add X number of students, whether it's under the $17 million or whatever, under somewhere under that average cost, you're continuing to ratchet down in terms of the average cost per student. So where we're at is at the 88% level now, and we're talking about going down to 80% under the governor's original recommendation. If you start adding, say you added these $17 million, and we were able to add X numbers of students, you could actually start to fall below 80%, even though you're adding some students within that context. And I think our biggest problem is that until we recognize what an appropriate kind of cutoff point is for the cost of a student, and we just keep adding them, we're just going to keep degrading, basically, what we're offering for services.
Paul, do you have anything to add to that as far as, figuring or accommodating enrollment growth? Because, as I said, but Tom makes a good point, and Steve, I hope you'll work with Tommy, fairly.
We're not disagreeing with his numbers.
No, I know that. But, to answer that kind of question, I'd like to know what it costs to fund, 100% instead of 87%, and that would tend to, take away some of the hurt when we have enrollment growth. Paul, comment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Tom did a good job describing the issue. I guess I'd add one more point, and that is, I know you'd all like for me to say it's cheaper by the dozen, and so the more we have, it's cheaper. On the other hand, that as enrollment grows, in some cases, if we add five more students, that means that we now need to add another counselor or another advisor or, in fact, have more space or more facilities or laboratories. And so in some ways, even a few students can actually increase just because you go over that threshold and need another resource. So I think it's pretty difficult to really say that on the margin over a long period of time that there's much of a saving for that reason.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I was afraid that was going to be the answer.
I told you that's because what you wanted to hear.
So I don't know how we, control our costs or the outlay as we increase our enrollment, which we surely want to do. Yes, Representative Schrader.
I want to make sure that I understand the enrollment-related cost line. There are two ways to allocate that money that have been identified in discussions with the governor's office and OUS. One is that, the total amount of students in each campus, and we would allocate that additional $17 million along that overall enrollment in each campus. For some campuses, though, they're talking about increased enrollment. In other words, they've had X number of students this year, or this last biennium, they're expecting X number more or less. And therefore, some campuses, you're working out where that would be their most important factor, so you'd rather use that as your enrollment dollar allocation, that model versus the other. Is that accurate?
That's true.
I'm probably okay with that, but I guess I'd like to know, for the purposes of next BAM, which ones those are and which campuses chose one model or whatever, which maybe there's a combination thereof. I could see that being the case.
We can certainly provide after the fall enrollment is authenticated. We can certainly provide that by allocation.
It's just a question of staying in sync, because one of the things the JLAC report talked about was trying to get all of our hands, so we're all talking on the same page. There's no question next time about what each legislature meant, what Oregon University system meant. It'd be better for all agree that this is what's happening, and then I think that's the best way to go. Then we don't have all this controversy, if you will, and part of developing the model. So maybe at the e-board or at next session or whatever's appropriate, they would report back once all the full enrollments are in place how they've allocated it so the next legislative session can track that. Mm-hmm. That way we have the accountability that the chair was talking about a little bit.
Tom had a comment to add to that.
Yes, Tom.
Senator, just one final thought, and kind of to leave you with a point that we had made earlier, that the $17 million is intended for growth. I mean, the primary purpose that was originally requested was as a policy package, part of $35 million request for growth in undergraduate and graduate enrollment. The issue, I think, one of the issues that's embedded in a lot of this is it will not be growth almost under any circumstance if we're talking about having to put it into a hole that's created by the loss of $45 million. Okay, $45 million, as it runs through the cells, provides instruction. It provides support. It creates a certain level of enrollment. If that or some amount of that goes away, then the 17 million can't really be kind of just propped on top of an existing FTE number and say, oh, we're going to grow so much. So that part of what I think when we talk about budget notes and talk about where we're going with growth in the end will depend on a variety of how much general fund is added back, if the 17 million is there for instructional purposes, even what the tuition dollars are as well. I mean, I think all of that will play into this in the end.
Sure.
Yes.
I'm sorry. But my understanding, the enrollment growth that was asked for is actually about 34 million, some in graduate, some in undergrad. This is 17 of that 34, and then we're also talking about the faculty salaries as a possibility out of that 45. So when we use the 45 figure, I want to be clear as to what components of that $45 million figure actually are.
Sure.
Definitely. Senator Trump.
When we went to the RAM model, obviously we left a lot of programs out of it, I guess the so-called targeted programs.
I wish we'd chosen another word now, but you know, that's...
Yes, right. I wish we had too. But anyway, we left those programs out with the assumption that there would be funding for those separate, right?
Yes, sir, Senator Trump.
Yeah, that they would not be... It seems to me like that... They're the programs that are going to suffer the most from these cuts.
Senator Trump, members of the committee, from the conversations with the governor's staff, it was made clear to us, and I think we accepted this, that if the core of our enterprise was instruction and research, then the funds that were exposed were the targeted funds that were outside of that. Painful. But
also the research within the...
Yes, it is. In this case, it is. That is a targeted, targeted investment.
It seems as though the way this is working out is that Oregon State is much harder hit than any of the other institutions.
The targeted reductions particularly hit Oregon State and several of the regionals, which the legislature over the years has treated as having a kind of mini land grant role in their region, southern and eastern particularly. So the reductions in targeted funds do impact more heavily Oregon State and several of the smalls. It's not uniform across, because there are no SBDCs, except the smalls, and you don't have the regional resource institutes, and of course the statewide are totally at Oregon State. Yes, sir, that's true.
The chancellor's office is affected about $5 million worth. Did we ever have a discussion of the impact of those on the system as a whole or on the operation of the chancellor's office?
There is discussion within the system, and there is some controversy, particularly led by the smalls, for whom we provide services that they're not able to provide themselves. The legislature in creating the system in 1930 singled out functions that would be done centrally, controller's functions, auditing, and some others, payroll to name one, and we are concerned about the impact on the smalls. In fact, we spent part of the day coming up in the car thinking about how to mitigate some of that. You can't duplicate those services seven times and have it be cost effective, particularly with the smalls.
And Joe, you know, I'll get back to the point. I mean, we discussed the funding model, you know.
Yeah.
The main reason, at least for me and I think for some of my colleagues, for doing it was that it would, give the individual institutions some autonomy so that they could act entrepreneurial without, losing any of the quality. And so this really has laid on your office, in my opinion anyway, a new challenge. It becomes more of a management, financial management, more than you've ever had to deal with, and I'm sure glad you have Tom there, because I think with his background and experience in managing other sorts of institutions, financial, that could be a lot of help. But I know that you know the questions that the 90 of us in the building have about the RAM and whatnot, and so I hope that you can anticipate the information that we want, so that Tom and Steve, can be working on it between now and what we're going to get to the budget, the puts and the takes, probably shortly after May 14th. And so between now and May 14th, I hope that you all can develop some information that will allow us to make an informed decision. You know, how do we treat the seven institutions, you know, as individual institutions, each of which have their own mission in terms of being high quality. And I know that's what you wanted.
Senator, that's the $64,000 question that I spend a lot of time thinking about. What's the balance between greater autonomy and sufficient cohesiveness within the system to achieve, how can you have the most autonomous institutions and still an effective system? And it's that tension that we go back and forth on. It's actually probably not unhealthy.
No.
And it shouldn't ever be cast probably in stone. But I worry when you have differences in size as significant as Eastern Oregon compared to Oregon State, developing a model and policies that fairly and adequately deal with that kind of difference in size is a challenge. We thought we had it correctly done in the first version. We didn't in terms of the smalls. That's why we've come back with one policy option package that would correct that up a bit. I suspect that's not the last correction you'll hear from the system over the next couple of biennia. But it could go in different directions. For example, there's a lot of conversation about payroll and whether that can be handled by the three large campuses themselves, and we would do it for the smalls. And we're into those kinds of discussions. And the conversation that we have with the presidents is about what did the board mean by greater autonomy? How much is greater? Does that mean that we could all decide to have a law school? The board said clearly no. So, I mean, there are parameters being laid out, and that's part of the board's role.
Representative Schrader.
Just one comment, one question. Just I'd like to get on record that the corrections to the model aren't all more dollars.
No.
It's also refining the model, which would mean the larger schools would get less if the small schools are not surviving as we, as you, the university system, anticipate. So hopefully we'll be able to come to some combination of the above to make it work, to make it work.
And functioning as a system, we took the issue of the funding of the four smalls to the total president's council, and all the presidents, including President Risser, President Frohnmayer, President Bernstein, supported that adjustment because they recognized it was the appropriate thing to do. So they're not all more dollars.
Yes,
Different topic. On line 49, just again so I understand the community college workforce development partnerships, is this additional money besides the money we dealt with within the community college workforce development budget, is that correct? Or is this a fund shift?
What this represents is the reduction in the community college budget and the governor's recommended budget in these regional partnerships. They will have impacts on the on the budgets of the three campuses that are in these partnerships, those being Eastern, OIT, and Southern. What I tried to do, I didn't have the exact numbers here. This is the total funding. So the impact on the university budgets will only be part of these numbers. Part of the impact is shared by the community college partners. I'll try to get better numbers. I think, in fact, they've already been given to me, but when I was working on this morning, I couldn't find that information right away.
I thought it was something like 2.8 at the community college level or something like that.
No,
more.
I don't believe so. No, it's 4.8. The 4.86 million that you see there is the reduction in the community college budget. And some of that will come back and affect the free time.
Well, I guess I'm confused then, Mr. Chair. I don't understand why we're seeing the community college budget reduction in the OUS budget.
Representative Schrader, if I could, they are the fiscal officer this biennia. But some of those dollars awarded to the CCs wind up being utilized by our part of the partnership on our campus.
Okay.
Well, what Steve's trying to figure out is what is that number?
Yeah.
All right. I'm just trying to get my handle. Everyone else here is a lot smarter than me, I have to figure. Yeah. But so in other words, the 4.8 would, or something close to that, would represent the total community college OUS impact.
Uh-huh.
And so when we look back and deal with the community college budget at work session, we want to keep in mind that whatever we do here may be restoring stuff in that particular
budget. Right.
And vice versa.
And vice versa.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Sure.
Give me a second, Senator. I had a thought. Joe, does your board spend a any amount of time or a great deal amount of time, you know, in discussion, just like we're having here, as to how we can, you know, make the seven campuses somewhat autonomous, but what's most important is accommodate the enrollment and keep the quality.
It's a theme, Senator, that runs through the Budget and Finance Committee and the Strategic Planning Committee discussions.
Okay.
I don't know that anybody believes that it's perfect yet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe never will be.
Yes, Senator Troy.
Excuse me. Just the flexibility on each campus that they might have and utilizing the resources from the RAM to do such things as maybe support research or something like that. Are they free to do that, or are those...
President Risser might be in the perfect spot to respond.
Are those resources tied down pretty much to each of those cell units?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cho, I think the campuses within reason have flexibility to use funds through the cells as the university sees fit. Now, there are two points here, one of which is, you know, the statewide public service program is separate and not through the cells, and so those funds are not transferred back and forth.
Is that true for any of the targeted programs? Are they that separate?
No, I guess that was my second point, and that is that, let's say, for example, money is targeted for engineering, that at least in theory we could move that money elsewhere, but I think that the legislature and the governor and the people of Oregon would look askance if we made major changes in those allocations. And so I think even though we have the theoretical flexibility, when funds are targeted for programs, we have the obligation to follow those directions as much as we can.
In the case of engineering, we're accountable to the industry council for those dollars.
Okay, Steve?
Just to finish through with this table, on lines 35 and 36, you can see funds that are added in the governor's budget, the $17 million for enrollment-related costs or enrollment growth, and the $8 million in small school adjustments. And you can see the four campuses that receive funds under those. If you go down to line 43, which is shaded in, this looks at each campus and shows that campuses are getting both cuts and enhanced, some of the cuts and some of the enhancements. And you can see that that's supposed to represent roughly what the impacts of the general funds decisions in the governor's recommended budget are. On line 45, that adds back the tuition from the tuition increase. The 4%, as it was originally put together, was designed to raise about $35.2 million. And this shows how those tuition funds would be projected to be distributed among the campuses. And obviously, this again is simply an estimate, because mm-hmm. we don't know exactly how many students each of these campuses will have, and that affects how much tuition they'll get. Line 47 combines both the general fund impact and the tuition impact, and shows, you know, very roughly the impacts of the budget on the campuses. And you can see there are cuts overall. Some of the campuses do show that they are getting more than they would have under the CSL definition of their funding. And these are primarily the smaller campuses, which were found to be especially underfunded during the current government. So there is some, you know, especially with the small school adjustment, some additional funds that are being provided to them. But what I think, again, the most useful purpose of this subcommittee of this type of looking at this way, just to give you a better understanding of how decisions that you make regarding should we put money back into targeted programs, should we put money back into cell values, assuming we've got this money, should we go ahead and fund the particular enhancements that are in there, you can see that all of these decisions will have impacts that go down to the campus visits. And as President Risser said, basically, unless there are specific fundings for specific programs, such as engineering, what a campus receives through the RAM is available to it to meet its general obligations, you know, its basic budget.
Okay. Representative Schrader.
Speaking of engineering, on line 54, it outlines the breakdown of the $20 million that is proposed in the governor's budget and co-chair's budget, too. I guess I'm wondering, you know, what is other systems statewide? That's $3 million of the $20 million, and then the OCECS office gets another $1 million. And I'm most interested in getting it to the campuses, and just curious what that means.
This is again a projection, and this is based on if the board in its upcoming meeting would approve to distribute all the funds through the engineering investment fund proposal. There are two different funding proposals that are out there, the Engineering and Industry Technology Council's proposal and the Tier 1 proposal. And they do distribute funds separately. The board has not yet decided which, if either of these exact formats to distribute the funds back. I think once you will hear that before the back-end work session, what the actual proposal is, and I think, you know, that would be a time for these types of questions to see how they are planning to distribute those funds. For these purposes, this was just based on the EEIF, because mm-hmm. that's how the governor showed it originally.
I guess, Chair, since we're doing all, do we have another session to visit with OUS again? I mean, I thought this was kind of the end of our...
As I understand it, we're back, sir, in May following the...
We'll have an actual day with it. I guess before they go too far down the line, it'd be appropriate for the members to give some input. I mean, not that you have to listen to us, but, you know, I'd like some explanation at some point in time, maybe at our offices or whatever, about that $4 million. And, again, I'm more oriented towards the Tier 1 campus proposal. That seems to be what we're trying to do, and to the extent that that means anything. But I would be interested in knowing what that $4 million gets us. It's open.
Just a quick observation. The $3.1 million that you see under other system-wide actually go to two institutions that are outside of OUS. You've got, I believe it's OGI, and I want to say OHSU, but it's institutions that are not, they are part of that process that we've had with the ETIC grants, but are outside of OUS, so we had to put them somewhere to identify the dollars.
Yes.
Just clarification, you clarified the other systems. What about the $1.8 million?
1.1.
Sorry.
OCECS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were Senator Hartung and Representative Winters. These are what you're seeing with this, and the observation is very correct that we're going to be coming back with probably a different set of distributions. But what this is part of a competitive process of which OCECS, which is kind of the overarching coordinator, I guess. In a sense, it's the broker for engineering programs throughout the system, actually is part of the competitive grant process. Now, that falls under the chancellor's office as well. So basically, they were competing. They would be identifying faculty and supporting faculty at the various institutions, which is where these dollars would go toward.
Representative Winters, if I can add... to that.
You saw my eyebrows raise.
if I can add to that, one of the things that we didn't have much time to talk about earlier, and Representative Schrager asked this question, and we didn't get back to it, had to do with OCATE and what that is. It is an umbrella organization to create a virtual college of engineering and computer science statewide, and through the Capital Center in Beaverton, under OCATE's aegis, we deliver programs out of there statewide, electronically and otherwise, using faculty that we have bought from individual institutions. There are no faculty of their own. So it's a way to broker statewide engineering services where a faculty member from Oregon State is delivering a course that winds up being received in four or five places in the state. It's a way of brokering. It actually, you get more mileage out of your faculty by doing that. He's not traveling around. She's not traveling around. You're providing those courses electronically or, in some cases, by conferencing. That's the virtual part. Bob Dryden wears multiple hats. One of them is as head of OCATE. OCATE also spends a good deal of time delivering professional courses in the engineering community, the certification, relicensing. They don't get degrees for it, but we provide those courses and they pay for it.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Are you head representative?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That help? Okay.
Senator Trump.
I understand that some parts of this budget will be sort of farmed out to another subcommittee. Do we have an understanding of what those parts are and when it will come back?
Yeah, the chair has asked that the see statewide services go to the Natural Resources Committee, and it would come back to us.
That's the statewide services at OSU. Is it any of the other targeted things?
I don't think so.
Statewide services? Okay. How about the veterinary medicine?
We can handle that.
Yeah, it's not in any of this. Question, Steve. Line 13, a $44 million reduction. How does that relate to line 43, general fund reduction? Those are some of the same dollars on the front page.
Yes, the 43 would include that 44, basically that $45 million, plus all of these other reductions.
Okay.
So the total amount.
Okay. Well, let's see, how do you get... there's some enhancements there.
Yes.
That offset that to get to the 43 in line 40. Okay.
Sheriff,
Senator Trow.
Have we asked higher ed to give us any kind of prioritization of things if there is money to be added?
Sir,
where you'd like
we have, and our very top priority would be restoration of the $45 million to the core of the model and that 7.5 to the statewide.
And after that, do you have any
sir? Sir, if we're in that position, we'll be happy to go down the remainder of that list with you. But what you have in us from us in writing, mm-hmm. is pretty much what the board has instructed us to stick to. We couldn't depart without consultation from that very much.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, on the flip side, revenue forecast, if it's going the opposite direction, what would your priorities be?
Okay. Representative Winters, that's the question I wake up at 3 in the morning thinking about. And I'll answer you very honestly. I don't know whether this would be supported by the board I work for or the president's, but it would be to do everything we could to preserve the core of the enterprise, to protect undergraduate enrollment, and to protect access. And not diminish quality, but if that would put you up against some pretty tough choices. But I think I would be remiss if I didn't fall back on those board priorities and say it's quality, it's access, it's the core. And that's some very hard choices. I mean, I subscribe to 3 public radio stations I don't even receive, because I happen to be a fan. They're my colleagues at Southern Oregon. That is an incredibly important service down there to those 7 counties. And but if it comes down to that versus the communications journalism program in Southern, I think that's a tough call. And I think I know how that has to go. It has to go with the program, with the core instruction program.
Any other questions? Comments? Yes. Representative Schrader.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I'd like to see the budget for the OCECS at some point, if that's okay.
Okay, sure. I don't think I have that with me, but I can walk it by tomorrow.
Yeah, and on things like that, Steve, would you give those to each one of the members to the OCECS?
I believe that is in Mr. Dryden's testimony from day 3, Representative Schrader, but if I'll check to be sure, and if it's not, I'll be by with it.
Oh, okay.
I think it's day 3.
Okay.
In fact, I might even have it.
Okay, if you have it, why give it to Steve? Or do you have anything else, Steve?
I just wanted to go over. I'm pretty much done with this table. Unless there are any questions. I just wanted to briefly talk about some of the issues involved in the funding enhancements, which are on the salmon color sheet. And just basically mention them and see if there is any response from the subcommittee now, or whether you have anything that you'd like me to look into. Some of these we've already gone over or discussed when we were talking about some of these issues earlier. But the enrollment growth funding package in the governor's budget, again, the question is, should this funding be tied to a particular level of enrollment growth, or should it be applied generally to support existing programs and offset other funding reductions? And this is a decision that I think, this committee can make, and it's, if the committee directs OUS to do it one way or the other through a budget note, that's what would occur. And this is something that I think you want to just consider when you look at this, the total funding package that you're eventually able to provide. It may vary depending upon how much the total, the bottom line is, how you want to deal with any particular enrollment growth funding.
Joe, we'll want to address this, of course, you know, after the May 14th forecast, but please come prepared to address that question.
For the engineering and computer science program, there's $20 million enhancement in the governor's budget. And one thing that I don't know if it's been very clear is, note that this is only a $15 million increase over the current funding level. Typically, a $20 million enhancement would mean just that. It's $20 million above the current level after adjusting for inflation. But there's $5 million that is currently in the budget that was provided on a one-time basis. It was not rolled into the CSL. So what we're really talking about at this level of funding is $15 million more for engineering programs than we've got now. And OUS had requested $50.6 million from the governor and only received the $20 million. So this was only a partial funding package. And there are two competing proposals, not competing, I should say two complementary proposals that made up the $50.6 million. The first one is the $30 million, which is what we've been calling the ETEC proposal. And then there's the Tier 1 proposal. And again, please note that higher ed will be coming back with a decision as to how to allocate the $20 million in the governor's budget between these two proposals. But in either event, I think that you know, the subcommittee will be interested in knowing what types of outcomes this is supposed to fund in terms of enrollment, you know, number of student enrollments, number of degrees, programs, research fund activities, and that sort of thing. So these are things that I think you would want to make some expectations and put them into a budget note to convey what your expectations are and to see what the system is preparing to use the money for. Another item was that the Oregon University System had requested or had projected $17 million in industry contributions at the full funding level, but the state budget wouldn't provide the full funding level. So the question is, how much in industry contributions is it reasonable to expect at a reduced level of state support? We don't know the answer to that. That that's an important piece of information to try to get, to know how much the industry would be expected to contribute at the reduced level of state support.
Okay.
Mr. Hartog, members of the committee, we would hope that it wouldn't diminish at all. And I think that Oregon State and Portland State are very committed to raising. The reason Bob Dryden couldn't be here today is that he's out on two important asks that would garner private support. But one way you could look at this is, with the initial $5 million, we generated 6.9 in targeted and leveraged private investment. And thus far, in the biennium is not over, with $10 million, we've generated 7.1. So I believe we could project from that with a $15 million investment. But again, it's projection.
Yes, Tom?
Senator Hartung, members of the committee, I'm incorrect on something, but I agree that the $15 million for the engineering and computer science programs, it's a $15 million increase, but the intention is that the $5 million would continue in the base and there would be another $20 million on top of that. The policy package is $20 million without an intention of moving five from the base or from the other grant forward. So where our assumption has been in the request that $5 million would be in the base, $20 million is added on top of that.
Let me think about it. There is $5 million in the base. You're correct. There's $5 million in the base, $20 million on top of that, for a total of $25 million. During the current biennium that we're now in, there is $10 million. So that's why it's a 15. You're going from $10 million to $25
million. Oh, okay. So it's okay, great.
$10
million. Great. Thanks.
Steve, would you explain that again?
Okay. Yeah.
During the current biennium, there's $10 million being funded specifically for engineering education enhancements. And I want to note that there's additional funds going to support engineering education. These are just enhancements over what had been in the base before 1997. So there are $20 million in enhanced, there are $10 million in enhancements.
So those roll up.
Only $5 million carried forward.
Okay,
so the CSL has $5 million in it. Then this package would add $20 million on top of the $5 for a total of $25 million, which is 15 above the 10 that we just talked about.
Yeah. Leave out that 15.
Just leave the 15 out.
20, yeah.
If Tom's okay, I'm okay.
Question, please?
Yes.
Just to make sure that I understand. So, Stephen, you said $5 million was a one-time. It was $5 million of the $10 million that was a one-time, and the other
right.
$5 goes on.
Exactly.
Okay. Certainly.
The $25 million, just make sure I understand, does roll up or does not? Only? You say only 5 of the 25.
That's the decision you have to make.
What was the answer? I'm curious what OUS said.
Senator Hartung, Representative Schrader, that will be something we need to talk about. 5 of the 10 that exists in this biennium moves forward.
Right.
What we'll be doing is bringing forward a proposal that looks at $20 million and in some fashion is split between the top tier initiative and the ETIC initiative. Top tier initiative is one that's built on the concept that those dollars have to continue in the base. So depending on how many dollars that is, will drive the degree to which we're seeking. Obviously, we'd like to see the dollars roll up completely, full 20 some the $25 million. But we need to look at that and bring that back as part of our board approved
package.
I don't obviously never bring the right papers with you, despite you have a book about this thick, at least I do. When I was looking at the Tier 1 proposal, like for Oregon State University, and they had a spreadsheet that showed over time what they hoped to buy with X amount of state dollars and what the match was. It was very, very helpful. And I probably misremember this, but it seemed to me like the amount that the state kicked in sort of decreased over time. There was like two biennia was the same, and then another two biennia kind of ratcheted down. Do you reckon?
The state amount should have been the same, but I think the private giving was and the federal dollars and so forth was actually increasing.
President Risser,
I'll go back and look at that.
I think, Mr. Chairman, Representative Schrader, I think that the numbers in the proposal you saw were for $15 million from the state over the next three biennia, and then $130 million from private funding. And I think the chart you saw showed $20 million, $20 million, and $10 million, and that's probably what you're remembering in terms of how to get to the 50. Now, obviously, the state board and the governor, neither one recommended as the full $50 million.
Right. Okay.
But you're correct.
Mm-hmm. Steve?
Evan? Finally, a policy item relating to engineering and computer science is the state of the economy. No one mentioned when they were talking about this something that we all know about, and that is that the high-tech economy isn't doing all that hot right now. It's doing all that well right now. And I think it's a legitimate issue to see whether in this type of limited budget situation, whether this would be an investment that should be made now or perhaps deferred until some time when the high-tech sector does better. What I've done here is on these other pages is I've given you some information on high-tech employment in Oregon from 1972 to 2000, given the employment department's definition of high-tech. Everyone uses a different definition of high-tech employment, unfortunately. But using the employment department's definition, you can see that there's been a great deal of growth up to the present time. The second page shows this is the economic forecast, the state economist's definition of high tech, which is only manufacturing. It doesn't include any of the computer science, the computer services.
Does that include the R&D?
It includes the number of employees in certain types of industries that For example, in electronic and electric equipment
it does include
industries, it includes all of their employees, not just their R&D employees, not just their engineers. But this is sort of the benchmark that we use to track Oregon high-tech employment. And the forecast has projections of this employment. And if you see what's happening here is that high-tech employment is not expected to exceed its previous peak in 1998 until the year 2003. By the year 2003, at the end of this biennium, the employment is expected to exceed its previous peak. Again, this is just a projection, and we don't know if this is really going to work this way. What I think that this shows is that there is continued need for expanding engineering programs, because we're not forecasting either flat employment or declining employment. But when the new forecast comes out in March, there'll also be a new forecast of this employment
in May.
And, you know, it may be reasonable to look at to see if there's, you know, what's going on in this employment. I don't think it's something that, you know, warrants just being ignored.
That's a good point, Steve. And so, Joe, when we be prepared to address that, hear your thoughts.
Well, everything we look at, this is January, February, everything we look at suggests that those employment numbers will continue to go up.
Mm-hmm.
They will move around in the high-tech community because,
yeah,
as Steve said, high-tech is everything from the metals initiative as they view it to electronics to instrumentation. Some sectors are continuing to grow, whereas others are flat. We'll have to see how it balances out. One of the things that is happening that I would point out to the committee is, and Paul can comment, a line between what is computer science and education and what is engineering, particularly in software, is getting blurred by the day. It's some of the folks graduating in computer sciences are walking right into engineering jobs, and vice versa. It's the lines are getting very, very fuzzy between those two.
Where's biotech engineering fit in? Just the engineering part?
It's not shown on this. It's not shown on this chart. I think that the economic revenue department looks at biotech separately. I don't know why I'm remembering that.
You're correct.
Their definition of high tech is more narrow, and I don't think it extends to bioengineering and biosciences. Unless I'm wrong.
You're
I haven't looked at it, but we will.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And for the remaining two enhancements in the governor's package, I've just indicated for the small school funding how those funds are anticipated to be distributed. This just repeats the information that's on row 36 of the charts we were looking at earlier. And for the Central Oregon grant, again, these were some measures that were discussed in the governor's budget documentation as to what the expectations are for the new branch campus. These are also, I think, items that you would want to have some kind of idea as to what your expectations are for the new campus in terms of the programs and students that it would offer. And I know that we'll be working on a language that could accurately express that, or what the system is projecting.
Okay. All right, so you done?
I'm done. Just wanted to bring up some issues
that
I've got some information that I thought you would find helpful.
Right, and members, you know, as things occur to you, I get those questions to Steve so we can be prepared to get some answers when we get into the final work on the budget.
Just one question, and because I was talking about biotech and where are the dollars for the biotech were in this, but I understand that they'll also be in the OSHU budget as well.
In the governor's budget, there's a significant expansion for OHSU, and under that budget, essentially the thrust of expanding educational programs and research programs in biotech is directed toward OHSU. There's no specific funding package for that outside of the general engineering programs, which are not. Most of those are not really in biotech for OUS in this budget.
and I would offer, if I may, much to our disappointment, because we felt there were some outstanding biosciences proposals from both Oregon State and U of O.
Yeah, that's the point I wanted to make as well. It seems to me like that since we ought to have a unified state effort and there are already existing research programs that are very significant, that they ought to be incorporated into this plan.
So, Joe, I understand you say there was originally that request.
Yes, sir. We had developed, in addition to the Tier 1 and the top and the 2X proposals, we had developed what were called Spires of Excellence proposals, that building on the strengths at Oregon State and U of O particularly and elsewhere, but those two particularly, we had put some proposals forward that I thought had real merit. Executive branch went a different way and invested it primarily all at OHSU.
What's the co-chair of budget say? Do you know, Steve, in that regard?
Does not speak. Don't believe it speaks at all to the OSU or U of O proposal. I'll check, but I don't think
there's any reason why we shouldn't speak to it as a legislature.
Yeah, this committee will address that also when we get into work. What kind of, do you remember what sort of numbers you had?
This is off the top of my head, but Diane Bynes is sitting here. I think our request was for $12 million.
With $8 million of it being related to one specific joint collaborative effort in proteomics and functional genomics.
Okay. All right.
No, I'm glad I raised it.
Absolutely. Yeah, the biotech engineering, in the sciences, I've had people tell me, people that should know, that discipline will be to this century what the Industrial Revolution was to the last century. That may be a stretch, but
I don't think there's any question.
But so we want to make sure that we put all of our resources to that effort. You don't have anything?
No, sir.
Any other questions from the members? Yes, Representative Trader.
Just a comment that I'd hope that next time we get together, we'd look at some of the JLAC recommendations for budget notes and kind of keep us all again together and on track so we're working together on this whole project.
Okay. Anything else? If not, we are adjourned. Thank you.